Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. Today, I am happy to share a returning author with you and one of our recent Firebird Book Award winners. She is Diana Grillo, and her winning book is titled An Accidental Murder and Other Stories. Diana lived in a wealthy suburb in Westchester County, New York, and the contrast of wealth and social status made her feel as though she never quite belonged. She became a mother at a young age and worked her way through college while raising a son and a daughter, and she began writing following retirement. She now lives in Cave Creek, Arizona, with her husband, where she draws on the sharp contrasts of her youth and her journey through life as an inspiration for many of her short stories. And her message is ultimately one of hope, perfect for these times, and I am thrilled to share her with you once again. So welcome back, Diana.
Thank you, Pat. Glad to be back.
Oh, I'm glad to have you here as well. I so enjoyed your book when I read it several years ago, and congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Award.
Thank you very much. That was very exciting for me.
I know, me too. You won in the short story category. I wonder, has winning the award given you a fresh reason to be able to go out and promote the book again?
Yes, it has. It has. When I won and got your message, I sent the sticker out to my friends who had encouraged me and helped me with this book, and they were also very excited, and I got lots of congratulations. So I appreciate that very much, and I'm honored.
Well, I was honored to have you enter, so I appreciate that, and thank you. I want to talk about your book a bit today. Maybe just tell us a little bit about your personal background, as it was instrumental in the writing of this book titled An Accidental Murder.
As you said, you know, I grew up in Westchester County in a wealthy suburb. My family was not wealthy, and so there was always that feeling of not really belonging and, you know, looking at the beautiful stores and all of the people that I went to school with, although they were very wonderful people, they had so many privileges that I didn't have. And, you know, the clothes that they wore and getting their hair done as a young girl, it was always, the contrast was so stark. And, you know, my father was abusive. He wasn't just physically abusive, but he was mentally abusive, and he did not provide for the family as a normal father would. So we went without a lot of things, a lot of food. We were in food insecure, although they didn't call it that then. And we didn't have clothes, proper clothes to wear. And so you felt less than others in that community. So it was difficult.
It sounds extremely difficult. And I'm wondering, was there a particular event or a reason when you realized that you had to put some of these stories on paper?
Well, I began to write after I dedicated the book to my daughter, Laura, who passed away suddenly from a stroke. Writing for me was a way to really get through the grief, and I don't mean get through it, but to help me through the grief of, and loss of my daughter, who was so I was so close to and loved so much. And so that's how I began writing short stories, to keep my mind going and to get away from the really dark place that I was in when she passed away. And so it was very helpful to me. Also, I had always been writing in my head about the things that happened to me, but I hadn't really put it to paper. And I was very new to this, and I needed a lot of help, and I did get that help from my editor, who is an amazing editor. Yes, and I wanted to talk about the feelings that I had growing up being trapped in a home where, you know, my father beat me, and I had no recourse. I couldn't do anything about it. There were no laws, and the laws were not there to protect anybody. He hit my mother. He hit me. He hit my siblings. And he just got away with it. And that was just life then.
Wow.
Secretive. You didn't talk about it. And it's so important to bring these things out and to have people understand what it feels like to be powerless in a situation where you can't do anything about it and there's no help in for you.
Right.
So I thought that writing these stories and hopefully having people read them and relate to them and understand would just give another dimension to this ongoing problem of abuse.
Well, as you're saying this to me, I'm thinking very cathartic for you. You were trying to get past the grief of your daughter's passing, and yet through the writing of this, you're now going back and reliving some even more dark and grief-filled times as well. So it was kind of like a double whammy for you, but then you came out the other end with this beautiful book that allows people to, I think, have some hope in recognizing that they may not be alone in all of this.
Yes, I'm really glad you said that, because that's absolutely true. I grew up in this area where I was also even though I was deprived of a lot of things in my family, I was very fortunate because the people around me were amazing. I had an amazing school that I went to, wonderful teachers. So there were a lot of positives in my life as well, close friends that I grew up with that I still have to this day, and you know, a wonderful class of smart and kind people. And so there was a lot of goodness going around. And in my stories, a lot of times I bring my brother into them. We were very close growing up, and he had some terrible abuse from my father as well. And we had a bond, you know, and it was kind of forced us in a way to be more bonded together. So, yes, I don't want my stories to end on a negative note. I want people to feel like you can survive this, you can get better, and you don't have to carry that abuse off to your family, because I didn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you don't have to. Sometimes people talk about the cycle of abuse, and I understand that that can happen. But it can also not happen. You know, you can want to be different, and you can be different in your life with your own children and with your own family.
We used the word several times already in this short amount of time, the word contrast, and your whole life has just been this big contrast. And I'm interested in just a moment to talk about the thought about contrast, you know, in that you grew up in a wealthy neighborhood as a poor family. And throughout each story, you tell about some aspects of abuse, both physical and emotional, manipulation, adultery. And yet there is always a bit of contrast in that there is a glimmer of hope for these women, you know, for the women to rise above. And I think it's this use of contrast that creates tension and drama, surprise, and ultimately some resolution within each story. And for me, that's what makes your book memorable.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you saying that, because it's exactly what I wanted to do. Put a glimmer of hope in all of this. Sometimes people will say to me, sometimes they're pretty dark stories, but I'll go, but wait a minute, you know, she came through this okay, you know. Right. Usually that's the case. Yep. And so I'm glad that you saw that. Appreciate that.
No, yes, absolutely. Like I said, I read this several years ago, but you are still in my mind. These stories are in my mind, which is a testament to your writing. So I appreciate that. You know, maybe give us a peek into a particular story within the book that you think really resonates with the state of the world today.
Yes. The story that I chose for the title, An Accidental Murder, is one of my favorite stories in the book. I think because it has a lot of, I'm not going to give it away for people who haven't read the story, but I think it has a lot of interesting characters and the way they interact with each other, about the husband and the wife and the sisters and the mother and daughter's relationships to each other. And also the friendship that arises from these, and the bonding that happens in the story. You know, it's a story about a woman who is being abused by her husband, and some people in the community know this, and it's all kept very quiet. And also it's setting in a time in the 1960s when the authorities and the laws were not there to protect a woman or a man in any case that was being abused. They just, laws weren't there. And, you know, basically, you know, if you were married to somebody, you could do whatever you wanted to, or to your children at that time, because there weren't the laws that protected them. And that's changed now, and that's wonderful. So I think that that's one of my favorite stories, because it brings in the time period of, you know, the turmoil that was going on in this country at the time, because it was, the civil rights movement was going on, and you would watch on the TV of these officers who were hosing down the protesters and just protesting for equal rights. And they were so forceful in their, you know, response to these protesters. But yet, when somebody was a woman or a man was being abused or a child was being abused, there were no laws to protect them. So I thought that contrast was really interesting, and I brought that into that story.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have another chapter later in the book that changes the focus where the ability to speak up and out against this type of behavior was encouraged. Is that right?
Yes, yes. The last story in the book is called The High of Deception. It tells the story of a working relationship where a supervisor is working with this woman, and she sees her coming in, and she's got long sleeves on, and she's got heavy makeup on her face. She has a good relationship with this worker, and the worker's a great worker, but she catches her smoking pot. And this is a county attorney's office, so it's doubly not good to do that. And so she has to let her go. But finding out later on that she's hiding all of these bruises on her face from her husband, and there is a contrast, because this story is set later on when the laws in this country did change, and that women and or men or anybody that's abused had the laws were there so that the authorities could come in and they could intervene and take care of somebody who's been abused. And so that story takes on the changes in our society and how that has benefited people, where this person could have died at that time if nobody intervened, or they just walked away, or there wasn't any means to help her. But in this story, she did get help. And that was good. And that shows that we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go, but we've certainly come a long way in this country.
Are you feeling that during these times, especially everybody's been locked down and there's a whole lot more stress going on, is your book even more relevant today?
I think so. I would hope so. You know, the interesting thing about being locked down is that one of the ways that I enjoyed showing my book and talking about my book was going to people's houses when they did their book clubs. I was invited to people's homes, and I would talk to them about the stories. After they read the stories, they would ask me questions, and I would talk to them about a particular story that they might have really liked or really related to. And that was very interesting to me. I love doing that. And I can't do that now because of the pandemic. But hopefully if we get back to a more normal time, that I can resume doing that.
Oh, it's kind of like a traveling therapy book tour, right?
Yes.
But really, think about that. Folks in their homes with other women, I would imagine, and allows them to open up and have these very candid conversations. I hope that comes back, because I think that you're offering a great, great service to people by doing that.
Yes, it was really wonderful. I really liked it. And, you know, I sat in the group, and it was mostly in a circle, and, you know, I really didn't talk that much, you know. I mean, when they asked me questions about the stories, of course, I shared what I was thinking and about the characters and what was happening. But it was interesting how it was really most of them doing the talking. And it was amazing, because so many of them had stories about either their own life and what happened in their life, or somebody they knew and somebody they were involved with. And so it was really, really fascinating to do that. And I loved it. It was really, really nice.
I hope that comes back. Because I think people now,
I hope so too.
Yeah, now more than ever, people need other people to talk to and with.
Yes, they do.
For sure. This was your first book, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
My first book.
Okay. Let's talk about the process of getting the words on paper and the publishing process. And you mentioned earlier an editor. Maybe share that with our listening folks today.
You know, I decided to, instead of looking for a publisher, I decided to self-publish. And that is kind of the way it's going now, that many, many people are self-publishing. It's very good in lots of ways, because you have total control over your book. You have control over the title, how you want your book to look, the cover, you know, that kind of thing, and the size and the print, and it's complicated and difficult to do, and I had some help in making all those choices. But also you have total control. Nobody's telling you what to do. So there's good and there's bad to it. Not bad, but difficult, more difficult. Mm-hmm. I did talk about my editor, and I wanted to just say that, you know, her name is Lauren O'Neill, and she's also a writer and also a friend and grew up in the same town that I grew up in. And so we've known each other for many, many years. I was very, very lucky to have her do the editing because she not only fixed my grammatical mistakes, but she was a content editor as well. And what that is that, you know, she would give me some hints about how to stretch as a writer, how to make that sentence sound a little bit better and things like that. And so it was it's a very collaborative kind of thing with your editor. It was very, very good and helpful to me. And I'm indebted to her because the story has just got so much better because of her input and help. It's also tricky because you don't want to lose your own voice. You know, you want to take the editor's suggestions and then run with it, you know, kind of, you know, so. Mm-hmm. And also I had some amazing, I thanked everybody at the end of the book, and acknowledged all the help that I got from the people who were, I called them my readers. And, you know, I would send my stories to them and they would give me suggestions and talk about what they thought about the story and the characters. And, you know, many times I'd go back and I'd clarify something because what they said wasn't really what I was trying to get across, and so I wasn't being clear, and so they were invaluable. And one in particular friend, her name is Ginger Benlifer, and she's a psychologist, and when she read my stories, she would always look at them in her professional way and the psychological aspects of them, and that was invaluable. And I did ask her to write something, and she wrote something about my stories and that's on the back of the book. I asked my editor to write the foreword, and I'd say to anybody who reads the book and has the book to please read the foreword first because she did an amazing job on that. Oh. So, yes.
You're very kind, and they were kind to you. It was just quite a collaboration. And what you're saying is of extreme importance, that you really can't go it alone and expect to put out a quality piece of work. I've seen folks attempt to do that, and you might be saving a dollar, but you're really not. Because, you know, we don't grow up as grammar scholars, and as you say, content as well. So it's not just a matter of where you put that period and the comma. Somebody does need to review it for content to make sure you're actually saying and people are hearing what you intended.
Absolutely. It's so important. And, you know, you want your book to be as professional as it can be, mm-hmm. and you know, not have lots of mistakes and things like that. And so, yeah, it was great. And also, I just want to say, too, that I decided to use the accidental murder story and the concept of that story as my cover. And so I asked a local artist, Dan Long, if he could paint a cover for me on a picture. And then, you know, he painted it in oils. And I actually have the original, and then I took a photo of that, and that is the cover of my book. So I was grateful to him. It was wonderful.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was also going to just ask you about the cover and how that came about. That's really cool to actually have somebody paint an original cover for you. So, and also in this book, how challenging was it to go occasionally from first person to third person?
Very challenging. And I'm not sure I've mastered that quite. So, yeah. Yeah, that was very challenging, actually.
What made you think to, why did you want to do that?
Sometimes, you know, it's funny, the stories, sometimes I'll get stuck on a story. I have to just say this because I think that probably other writers go through the same thing. You know, I'll get stuck in a story and I'll have, you know, half of it done and I just won't know where to go from there. And it always happens this way where I'm in bed and I'm sleeping and I just wake up and I go, oh, that's the way I'm going to do it. So I think I do my best writing while I'm relaxed and sleeping and just wake up because When I'm in the middle of a story, the characters are in my head and they don't leave me. And it's almost funny because when you end the story, you're almost relieved because you want to get rid of the characters that have been in there too long.
Had enough of this guy, right?
Yes, exactly. Enough. Oh, gosh, finished.
That's funny. So what's next for you? What are you working on now?
Well, I have 5 new stories. I was going to have one more, and I'm not sure if I'm going to do that one. So I may just go with the 5, and I thought I would just do either a second edition or just another book, including these stories in this book, and then the 5 new ones.
Oh, okay.
I'm not really sure which way I'm going to go with that, but that's next.
Are these 5 also a look back on your life?
Some of them are, yes.
All right. Well, we can keep our eye out for the new ones, right?
Yes.
Well, is there anything then we missed that you wanted to talk about today?
I don't think so. I am planning to do an audiobook, though. So that's the next thing on my plan to do that, to turn this book, The Accidental, An Accidental Murder, into an audiobook.
There you go. That way you've got it in paperback and Kindle and audio, and folks can hear it in any format that they choose.
Yes, yes.
All right.
I did want to say one other thing about self-publishing is that the difficult part of self-publishing is really marketing. And that is tough because you don't really know which way to go. And, you know, I guess when you do, when you're with a publisher, they take care of that and they do the marketing for you. But when you self-publish, you have to try to do it yourself. And I'm not a big social media person, and that's difficult because, you know, that's a good way to market. And so that is one of the hard parts. I wish it was a little bit easier for self-publishers, but it's not.
You're absolutely right. I'm glad you brought that up. I just had a gal email me yesterday and was talking about this very same thing. She goes, how can I go about marketing this? And, wow, there's just so many answers to that, and it takes so much time that it takes away from your actual creativity side and sitting down and writing, and now you become mechanical where you think, oh, okay, I have to do this many tweets and this many Facebook and put it on Instagram, and all of that just becomes very robotic. There's no joy in doing that day in and day out, and I'm not even sure that that's the way to really effectively market. I don't know. It's kind of a shotgun approach in a way. I personally, with my own books and what I do with my work, is similar to what you said, is that get out there with the people and talk with people and build those relationships and really affect people. I don't know that it's so much about seeing how many books you can sell, but how many people you can touch. So, you know, I think that's something to consider as well.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. It's true. It would be very difficult for me to have to be, an advertising person. Mm-hmm. It's just not who I am. And you're absolutely right. One of my cousin's friends who lives in Florida, absolutely loved my book and has been wanting me to go down there, and he wants to invite his friends to his house and for me to come and talk about the book, because he's read it and a lot of his other friends have read it. So that's something that I'm planning on doing. I'd love to do more of the book clubs and things like that. I did do one get together in our local library when, you know, pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I would like to do more of that, just getting out and meeting people. And you're right. It's not really about how many books you sell. It's about how many people read your stories and enjoy them. And that's really what it's all about.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, when you're no longer here, there will be people left whose lives will be better because of you, not because they paid money for the book, but because you touched their heart and perhaps changed their lives. So that's my final 2 cents on marketing. How's that?
I hope so. I agree, and I hope so.
All righty, my friend. So where could folks go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your book?
Yes, my book is on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, not in the store, but online. And I do have a website, shortstoriesbydiana.com, and they can listen to your broadcast, your wonderful broadcast.
Oh, thank you, thank you. So yes, your website is shortstoriesbydiana.com. Books are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, The Accidental Murder. Any final words before we head out?
No, I just appreciate you doing this interview with me, and I, again, I'm thrilled to win that contest, and I hope that people enjoy the book, read the stories, and pass it along. Anybody who you think might like them, enjoy.
Excellent. Diana Grillo, so happy to talk with you again. Thank you so much, and we'll have to have you back when you finish your next short story volume. Thanks so much.
Thank you.